ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
दुरास्तदतिथुर्धर्ष भूतानां स बभूवः. While carrying the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of his heart, Vasudeva bore the Lord's transcendentally illuminating effulgence, and thus he became as bright as the sun. He was therefore very difficult to see or approach through sensory perception. Indeed, he was unapproachable and unperceivable even for such formidable men as Kamsa, and not only for Kamsa, but for all living entities. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The word Dham is significant. Dham refers to the place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides. In the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, Dhamna svena sadha nirastakuhakam satyam param dhimahi. In the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there is no influence of material energy. Dhamna svena sadha nirastakuhakam. In any place where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is present by his name, form, qualities, or paraphernalia, immediately becomes a dham. For example, when we speak of Vrindavan dham, Dwarka dham, and Mathura dham, because in these places the name, fame, qualities, and paraphernalia of the Supreme Godhead are always present. Similarly, if one is empowered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to do something, the core of his heart becomes a dham. And thus he becomes so extraordinarily powerful that not only his enemies, but also people in general are astonished to observe his activities. Because he is unapproachable, his enemies are simply struck with wonder, as explained here by the words, Durasado Tidurdharasha. The words Purusham Dham have been explained by various acharyas. Sri Viraragava Acharya says that these words refer to the effulgence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vijayadvaj says that they signify Vishnu Tejas. And Shukadev says Bhagavat Swarup. The Vaishnav Tosani says that these words indicate the influence of the Supreme Lord's effulgence. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that they signify the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. While carrying the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead within the core of his heart, Vasudev bore the Lord's transcendentally illuminating effulgence, and thus he became as bright as the sun. He was therefore very difficult to see or approach through sensory perception. Indeed, he was unapproachable and unperceivable even for such formidable men as Kamsa, and not only for Kamsa, but for all living entities. The fourth chapter. Lord Krishna instructs Janama Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yoveti Tatvata Tyaktva Deham Punara Janma Naitimam Eti Sorajana. One who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never attains another birth in this material world, but attains my supreme abode. to understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities is the first and most essential question in this human form of life. From the moment they rise in the early morning to the time they take rest at night, all living entities are involved in the process of asking many questions. Primarily, where will I get my food? How will I arrange a nice place for sleeping? Where is there some nice pleasure for sex life and expansion of my family? And how can I defend myself and defend what is near and dear to me? In this way, practically, from the entire day, one's mind is occupied in trying to answer these questions. And according to Brahma Sutra, Atato Brahma Jigyasa, that when one takes this rare human birth, it is meant for one purpose alone, to inquire into the Absolute Truth. People are going to college inquisitive. The child, the first thing he does when he starts to gain more and more consciousness is he begins to inquire. Throughout life, it is simply a series of moment-to-moment-to-moment inquiries. That is the nature of the soul. To want to know God more and more, to want to love God more and more. But when the subject matter is perverted and Krishna is no longer the center, no longer the object of our inquiries, then we are cast into the illusory energy or Maya. Krishna's birth, as being explained here in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is divyam. It is divine. It is thoroughly transcendental by nature. In this material world, birth is not a very glorious thing. Lord Kapila Dev has said, karmana deva netrena, which means that according to one's previous karma or sinful and pious activities, one is forced by the supervision of material nature and the higher powers of the demigods who control this material nature to take birth in a particular living being's womb, in a particular species of life. Therefore, birth is something that is forced upon us by our own previous choices that we have made. And what is the glory of birth? We were discussing this the other night. People make a nice celebration for someone's birthday. Happy birthday, you have heard. Birthday means to celebrate the moment you were born. That's what birthday means. Birthday doesn't come once a year. Birthday comes once a life. That's the time, the moment you came out of the womb of your mother. That's your birthday. And actually what people celebrate is the anniversary of that birthday. And we're trying to remember how glorious and wonderful that day of birth was. But what a great illusion. What was glorious and wonderful? What was happy about that birthday? At the time of your birth, before, during, and after, the mother is in the worst tragic pain and anxiety in her entire life. Practically every woman, while she's giving birth, she just prays to God, I'll never go through this again. I'll never do this again. God help me. Of course, she forgets after some years. It's
terribly painful.
And when the child, it describes in the Bhagavatam how this child that has developed for 10 months is pushed through this very small opening. His body is being crushed, practically suffocated and smothering. It's so painful. What does he do when he comes out? Does he laugh and say, "Haribo, I'm here"? Cries. First thing the child does when he comes out of the womb is cries. What does crying mean? It means he's in pain. It means he's in anxiety. It means he's suffering. The mother's going through terrible suffering. The child is going through the most unbelievable, terrible suffering possible. Of all the pains that you may endure in life, nothing can compare to the pain of taking birth. It's so painful that the Shastra says you become so blacked out by that pain that you forget all your previous lives. Have you ever experienced the pain during this life that's so much that you've forgotten everything else you've ever done? That's the pain of birth. So the mother's suffering, the child is suffering, the father, he's suffering more than anybody because his is mental suffering. Prabhupada used to say that of all illnesses, whether it be cancer, AIDS, tuberculosis, leprosy, the most painful illness that causes the greatest suffering is mental illness. The father, he's so attached. He doesn't know whether it's going to be dead or alive. Here in India, he's worried whether it's going to be a boy or a girl. He's thinking about what about dowry if it's a girl. In this way, he's in complete anxiety. It's a terribly tense situation. Everybody's suffering like anything. And then, out of this great illusion, we want to just celebrate this day, happy birthday. Was it a happy birthday? It's a miserable birthday. But because we forget what birth really is, we want to celebrate it. And the greatest illusion, if we want to take words literally, there's only one birthday, and that's the day you're born. And people say to one another, out of love, so-called love, these are the kinds of friends we want in this material world, "Happy birthday, may you have many more." Huh? May you have many, many, many more birthdays. May you take birth again and again and again and again in this material world. It's essentially what they're saying. In this way, the illusion goes on. Nobody desires to escape the repetition of birth and death. Amongst devotees, we say, "May you never take birth again in this material world." Of course, Lord Chaitanya, "Mama Janamani Janamanishwari, for your service, Krishna, I'm willing to suffer the repetition of birth and death millions and millions of times. I am your servant unconditionally." So actually, for a devotee, birthday is glorious. As Narottam Das Thakur has prayed, "Manusya janama hoya Radha Krishna nahi." He says that now that I obtained this rare human birth, my Lord, I am such a miserly, unfortunate person that I have not served your Lordship Radhan Krishna. This human birth is meant for the purpose of worshipping the Lord and inquiring into the truth of life. And therefore, one who utilizes this valuable human birth for this purpose is most fortunate. And his birthday we can consider worth celebrating. Because what is this human form of life? It is the ultimate gift of God to anyone in this material world. It is described in the Bhagavatam that this human form of life is like a boat. This material existence is a vast, deep ocean. It's an ocean of problems, complexities, and so many sufferings. And this human form of life is the boat that can carry us across this ocean. So this human form of life is such a rare privilege. For millions of species of life, we've simply been drowning in this ocean. Birth and death, old age, disease, the threefold miseries. And finally, we're awarded a boat, which is perfectly suitable to take us across the ocean. But now that you have the boat, you must find a proper captain, spiritual master. And that spiritual master, he teaches us how to properly take advantage of the favorable breezes, which are the Vedas. To have a boat, even if you have all favorable breezes, if you don't have a good captain, those favorable breezes could actually do more harm than good. They could actually make your boat capsize and go under if you're not very expert. Or they can, those favorable breezes can make you go the wrong direction. Well, similarly, to directly study, to directly inquire into the Absolute Truth by studying the Vedas, which is the word of the Absolute Truth, without the help of a spiritual guide authorized by the Lord, it could actually do more harm than good. It can take us further away from the understanding of the Absolute Truth. It can increase our material desires. Therefore, this rare, rare blessing of the gift of God, we must take very seriously. By understanding the transcendental nature of the appearance and activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is our first consideration. Not how much money we could make, not how many children we can have, not how popular we are in the eyes of society. These things are not very important. Not how much we learn and how much we study. How much we understand the appearance and activities of Krishna. That is the first and only consideration of this human form of life. And everything else is only meant to be utilized in pursuance of that. So here we are reading about the divine appearance of Lord Sri Krishna. He is not coming into this world the way the ordinary living being is coming. Krishna says in Gita, Avajananti mamudha manusim tanamashita param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. Fools deride me. They think me to be like them. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. When a man and a woman want to have a child, what they have to go through. But Krishna is not like that. It is being described here how Vasudeva and Devaki, in their previous birth, they performed great tapasya. What was their name? Sutapa and Prishni, something? Huh? Sutapa and Prishni. They performed great, great tapasya. But try to understand that they were not just ordinary living beings performing tapasya for their purification. They are nitya siddhas. They are the eternal associates of the Lord who descend especially for the purpose of bringing, being the vessel in which the Lord takes birth in this material world. When they performed their great tapasya, the Lord appeared to them and explained that previously, as Kashyapa and Aditi, I took birth as Vamanadev. Also, I took birth as Prishnigarbh through your womb. In this way, Vasudeva and Devaki are simply representatives of the spiritual world to assist the Lord in his divine lila. And here it is being explained how the conception came about. Vasudev, he was in a prison cell with his wife Devaki, being persecuted terribly and unjustly by the atrocious King Kamsa. Kamsa's mentality was simply how I can enjoy power, control in this world. Different types of people, according to their particular mode of nature that they're living, they enjoy different types of sense gratification. Some people, they just like to eat. Some people, they just like to have sex. Some people, they just like to make money. Some people, they just like to become popular and nice to everybody. Some people like to give in charity and think, yes, I am the supporter, maintainer, preserver of all these dependent souls who are looking toward me. And some people, their enjoyment is to have power and influence over others, control. Yet at my hands, you either live or die. That is another type of sense gratification. So Kamsa, he was very demoniac. He simply wanted control over all directions. He was not satisfied with anything less. The more you have, the more you want. We see so many kings, they have huge kingdoms for their own practical purposes. Why do they need to conquer others? There's no reason. Whether they conquer the whole world or whether they have one little town, all they can eat is 6 or 7 chapatis. Not that because you conquer the world you could eat 1,000,000 chapatis, and if you only have one town you can only eat 3 or 4. They can only enjoy their senses to a certain limit. What is the difference? Just this mental perverted pleasure of being the controller, the conqueror. Very demoniac. This was Kamsa's mentality. And he imprisoned his own father, Ugrasena, and his own sister, Devaki, and his brother-in-law. So in this condition, we find that sometimes the Lord allows the demons, who are so aggressive for power, to overcome the devotees, at least temporarily. We find this again and again throughout religious history, that the demons are apparently, to the external vision, overcoming and conquering the devotees. In the Christian religion, Jesus was captured. He was put in prison. He was tortured. He was killed. He was crucified. So from all standards of vision, externally, he was conquered. He was defeated. The demons just extinguished him. But, by the arrangement of God, in his death, he became victorious. And similarly, we find the Pandavas. They were defeated in every level. They were defeated, but their defeat made them glorious. Their so-called defeat made their victory infinitely sweeter when it was Krishna's arrangement. And similarly here, Vasudeva and Devaki, how much they are glorified as being great devotees of the Lord, how much they were willing to endure. All they had to do was stop having children, and Kamsa would have never put them in prison. He was not afraid of them, he was afraid of their children. As long as they were having children, he had to keep them in prison. But it was Vasudeva's preaching to have children. Actually, he came to this world as a preacher. What is the duty of a preacher? To reveal God to the world. Preaching means simply to reveal God's mercy to the world. And different preachers may have different techniques, different styles, and they may be on slightly different types of missions, but they are all doing the same thing if they are true preachers. They are simply, selflessly, compassionately trying to reveal God to the world. What a glorious preaching mission he had. That through him and his wife, God was going to reveal his original transcendental form to the world. Of course, God is none different than his holy name. And one who is broadcasting the holy name of the Lord is also revealing God to the world. He's in the same mission as Vasudeva. So just as Vasudeva was persecuted and apparently defeated, similarly, we find throughout history so many great souls who are trying to reveal God to the world, either through his form. Vasudeva is trying to reveal God through his form. Others are trying to reveal God through his name. There is no difference between the name and the form. They are imprisoned. Why? Because the demoniac class of man, they do not want God to be revealed to the world. Because they are threatened. Because those who are too much attached to sense gratification and who do not want to surrender to Krishna, they understand that if Krishna takes birth, he will destroy me. He will destroy everything my life stands for. When Srila Prabhupada came to America, he said if they knew what I was coming to do, they would have killed me. Said that because I looked like a very helpless, poor old man, they didn't know. He was in disguise. Krishna disguised Prabhupada. Just a very simple... When I was speaking to Professor Larson at Slippery Rock State College some years ago, he said, no, I cannot believe that your Gurudev has launched such a very, very widespread, powerful movement and written all these books. He was friends with Prabhupada in 1965 near Butler, Pennsylvania. He said he was just such a simple old man. Just so simple. He was just asking me, what type of tree is this? And the apples in America are better than the apples in India. And does that tree bear fruit? He was telling me the whole conversation he had with Prabhupada. Prabhupada was just so simple, he said. And most of the time he was very quiet. We would just sit together on a bench, and he had his hands in that bag, and he was just praying. So very simple, very modest, very, very humble. He said, I can't imagine that he was a manager, or that he could give big lectures.
He was just a simple man. And he was very old. I was thinking, Swamiji, you have come all this way at this age. What will you do? But he was very intelligent, he said, very scholarly, very intelligent. So I can imagine maybe he gave Professor Larson 3 books. The first 3 volumes of Bhagavatam, which were printed in India. And Professor Larson said to me, I thought that these were the only 3 books he ever wrote. I was thinking, how will he's so old, how will he ever continue this Bhagavatam? And when he was told that there was 150 centers, tens and thousands of devotees, tens and millions of books distributed in over 30 languages, when he was told this, he says, I don't believe it. Not that little old man. So he came in disguise. By Krishna's grace. But what was his mission? The same as Vasudev's, to reveal Krishna to the world through his name and through his form. One of Srila Prabhupada's greatest aspirations was to have beautiful Rathayatra ceremonies in the streets of every city worldwide. What does Rathayatra mean? Rathayatra means revealing Lord Jagannath, the Lord of the universe, to the universe. It's a day when God will be revealed to everyone. Prabhupada considered this to be one of the topmost auspicious of all festivals of the year. Because it is the more than any other festival, it is the day when God reveals his causeless mercy the most indiscriminately to everyone on the largest scale. Janmashtami, Ramanomi, these days, the devotees come to the temple to celebrate. But on Rathayatra, even people who are completely immersed in worldly life, just going to work, even the prostitutes on the streets, even the drug dealers on the streets, they are all having darshan of the Lord. They are all taking the prasad of the Lord. They are all hearing the holy name of the Lord. And when Prabhupada came to America, he realized that the only hope for these fallen souls is Lord Jagannath. A few people will be attracted to the holy name, but the masses will have the darshan of Lord Jagannath. Let us have Rathayatra. So in this way, the great devotees, this is their life's meditation, their life's aspiration, simply to reveal Krishna to the world. And whatever happens in the process, they don't mind. There may be different, Krishna may empower different devotees with a different method of revealing Krishna to the world. Prahlad Maharaj was a good devotee. And Hiranyakashipu really didn't mind him being a good devotee. What he couldn't tolerate is he was revealing that devotion to others. It was a great embarrassment to him, and it was a great threat. But the more cruel Hiranyakashipu was, the more glorious Prahlad became in the eyes of all. So really, although from the external point of view, the persecution of great devotees is an expression of the envy of the demoniac and their fear of God, but on an internal level, we can understand that it is Krishna's arrangement to glorify those who are so surrendered that they're willing to endure anything for his sake. So Vasudev, he just kept having children. It doesn't make sense. He knew that if he ever had a child, As long as he was having children, he would be in prison and the child would be slaughtered right before his eyes. Do you know how painful that is for a mother and father? After nursing a child for 9 months in your womb and then he comes out and he's part of you. And after all that, you know inevitably that Kamsa's going to come and just beat him bloody against a rock right before your eyes. Very difficult. But they kept having children. And therefore they had to stay in prison. Huh? Why? Because they knew that the eighth son would be Krishna. And they had to somehow or other go through the other seven in order for Krishna to come. Whatever happens to these seven, that's beyond our control. But we have to have these seven in order for the eighth to be born. That's Krishna. That was their total surrender, their total sacrifice. And here is the culmination of their austerities, that the Supreme Godhead himself is in a most wonderful way simply appearing in the mind of Vasudeva. And from his mind he is being transferred to the heart. And here it is explained that the heart of Vasudeva is the holy dham. Srila Prabhupada in purport is explaining what is the meaning of a holy dham. It is the place where the Lord resides. Vrindavan, Dwarka, Jagannath Puri. These places are holy because the Lord has revealed himself and enacted his divine pastimes there. But factually, wherever the Lord is being remembered with devotion, the sound vibration of his pastimes are none different than those pastimes themselves. If you remember Krishna's lila in your heart becomes the holy dham, literally, not figuratively, literally. Krishna is none different than his name. If you are sincerely remembering the holy name, your mind and your heart becomes the holy dham. Krishna is there. That is why Sri Advaita Acharya, he spoke in this way to Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, wherever are the lotus feet of a pure devotee, that is the holy dham. That is where Krishna is most revealed in this world. Bhavad Vidha Bhagavatas Tirata. It is explained by Yudhisthira Maharaj to Vidura that saints of your caliber are worshipable holy places because the Lord is always within your mind and heart, and you are always revealing the Lord through whatever you do. You are holy places personified. And it is described that all the holy rivers and all the holy places are contained in full at the lotus feet of one who is surrendered to Krishna. And it's also described that going to a holy place without seeking the shelter of the lotus feet of such a person is a symptom of Kali Yuga. You'll never understand the holy place without the help of the sadhu. They are the ones who are specifically petitioned by Sri Krishna and empowered to reveal him to the world. So therefore, it is our greatest aspiration of a devotee, by taking shelter of the holy dham of the lotus feet of a great soul, that the holy dham is revealed within our own lives, within our own hearts. So it is described that when Krishna appeared within Vasudeva, he became effulgent, like more than the sun. Even Kamsa could not look at him. It didn't change his envy any. Probably it made it worse, actually.
But
Kamsa could not even look at Vasudeva. He was so brilliant, so beautiful, so effulgent.
And it describes what to speak of Kamsa.
Nobody could look at him. He was just bright with the grace of God.
And this is the reciprocation of the Lord and his devotees. Because Vasudeva and Devaki were willing to go through terrible tribulations on behalf of Krishna, Krishna was so benevolently giving himself to them in such a beautiful and wonderful way. But that's not the end of the story. We're about to read how Krishna is going to appear in his beautiful forearm form to Vasudeva and Devaki, and they're going to fall at his lotus feet and offer beautiful prayers. And then upon their request, Krishna is going to transform his form into the most beautiful of all babies that have ever appeared in all of creation. Could you imagine? This is an important point. We see how a mother, when a child is born, I mean, if we want to be unbiased, how many children, when they're just born, are beautiful? They're creatures. They just look like little creatures, right? They're terrible looking, huh? People go and they say, oh, how beautiful, your little baby just born. Like, beautiful? It's all scrunched up like a raisin. And yet, the mother and the father and all the relatives are so attached to this creature that have just somehow or other manifested. Huh? The affection is so much. It's immense. Could you imagine if Krishna became your child at birth? He wasn't scrunched up like a raisin. He was absolutely beautiful. He had the most swarthy, bluish complexion, lotus eyes. Every limb was just perfectly placed. He was the embodiment of supreme beauty. Could you imagine having a baby like that? How much you would become attached to it? This is how much Devaki and Vasudeva were attached to Krishna. And yet they were told on that very night, take me to someone else's house. Exchange me for the daughter of Nanda and Yashoda in Gokula. And what did Vasudeva say? What did Devaki say? Did they say, no, no, no way, not after all this trouble, not after all these years of seeing children killed just to bring you into this world, what we've done for you, and now we have a few moments of your association and you're going to leave us? You're going to leave us to stay in jail and you're going to go out and herd cows or whatever and go cool? And they didn't complain. Vasudeva said, yes, my lord, your wish is my command. This is surrender. This is the great, great, exalted surrender of the Lord's pure devotees. But, just as we were recently in Vrindavan, we went to a very famous place in Sri Mathura Dham. It is the place called Kamsthil. It is the hill where Krishna killed Kamsa. And after he killed Kamsa, he was only, I believe it was 12 years and 8 months old when he left Vrindavan, came to Mathura, went to the Rangabhumi, the wrestling arena, and there he went to where Kamsa was sitting on the dais, and he dragged him off of the dais and beat him with his fists and killed him. And then what did he do? From 12 years and 8 months,
to when he left this world, approximately at 125. That means 111 years and some months. He lived with Vasudeva and Devaki. In Mathura he lived with them. In Dwaraka he lived with them. And exchanged such beautiful, loving affection with them throughout the rest of his lila. Fulfill their desire to the ultimate extreme and beyond. But just to make them glorious throughout history, and just to give them the chance of rendering such special, unparalleled service, the Lord put them through great tests and tribulations in the process. And through them, Krishna was revealed the world. Therefore, we all have a great debt to such great personalities. And how can we repay our debt? Simply by hearing and chanting the glories of that Lord who they reveal to the world. By watering the root of the tree, we pay all our debts. Vasudeva and Devaki didn't want anything for themselves. They simply wanted the world to fall at the feet of Krishna, their beloved son. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. As Krishna is within his name, by taking shelter of the holy name of the Lord, we are, more than in any other way, expressing our appreciation and gratitude for all the great devotees of the Lord throughout all of history who have sacrificed so much just to give Krishna to us. When we would ask Prabhupada, how can we repay you for all you've done just to bring us Krishna conscious? What would he say? Chant Hare Krishna. all the previous acharyas, all the previous avatars can all be fully repaid. Well, we can never fully repay, but according to our capacity, we can fully satisfy them simply by taking shelter of the glorification of the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Is there any questions?
Yes, you also said that kings, actually there was no need for a king to conquer the world of lands. So the original requirement was that they were necessary to fight it from the land. Yet, from the sense that it was just to conquer it. This is a practical question. What should be the position of the devotee? Just for example, if this basic requirement and everything is satisfied, should he go for more and more expansion or diversification of his business or profession? Or should he concentrate more on his spiritual life? Because it is, although we do our business for expansion and everything, all right, one attitude of a service motive with Krishna, that how can get any service to Krishna. But yet it has been observed that he cannot give full concentration because we have lots and lots of problems when we enter into the business. And we have to deal with all sorts of people who are all atheists, they don't have any, and we are engaged with them, and their full concentration of spiritual life is not in place. So if our basic requirements are satisfied, should we go for it or should we divert ourselves?
This was the same question Arjuna was asking Lord Krishna. That if all I have to do is think of you, why should I fight this battle? It's more difficult to think of you doing that. Right? Therefore, the question is simply how we could best serve. The quality of our thinking of Krishna is to the extent we are pleasing Krishna through our mood of service. We don't want to think of Krishna to enjoy Krishna. We want to think of Krishna to be enjoyed by Krishna. So how could we best serve? And that is why we need a spiritual master. And that is why we need advanced Vaishnavas to give us guidance. Because really, we do not know how we can best serve. Raghunath Das Goswami, he was a big businessman. He made all of us look very small time. He was very big. His father and grandfather, they were pious, religious. His father and uncle were very pious. They were supporting most of the Vaishnavas. Huh? They were dovetailing and utilizing so much of their money in the service of the Vaishnavas and in the service of Krishna. And they were very ancient. And Raghunath was just, according to their calculations, he was the perfection of somebody who was perfectly competent to take over the business and expand it beyond their capacity. And not only that, he was their only son. I mean, what if parents work so hard for what? So that they can enjoy, but then they know they have to die, so their solace is, I can give it all to my son. But here, their only son, he wanted to give everything up. And when he approached Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you just pretend to be a good grihastha now. He was also married. A beautiful, chaste wife. That you just pretend to be a good husband now, but when Krishna's mercy is on you and it will be revealed, leave it all. And he left it. And he went to Jagannath Puri and became the assistant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's personal secretary, Swarup Damodar. And when he came, Lord Chaitanya didn't send him back home. He said, oh, you are lucky. You have escaped the deep, dark well of family life. People go to pass stool. Huh? And he told him that he sent him to
he stayed with him for so many years in Vrindavan, in Puri, then he went to Vrindavan. But what was the capacity of his service? He inspired hundreds of millions of people throughout history to surrender to Krishna. Huh? By his example, by his writings, by his teachings. Rupa and Sanatan were, Sanatan Goswami was a prime minister of the whole of Bengal. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, get out of this position. Go to Vrindavan. But how many prime ministers have Bengal had? Who remembers any of them? But Sanatan Goswami, we all remember. Because he revealed the treasure of Prema Bhakti to the world. So this is how they could best serve. But in the case of Kurma Brahman in South India, he was just as detached. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Kurma Kshetra, he said, he stayed with him for some days and the Kurma Brahman became a pure devotee. He became so attached to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When the Lord left, he went with him. And Lord Gauranga said to him, where are you going? He says, I'm going with you. He said, why? He says, because this family life is just such a disturbance, so many complications, so many problems. He could have said, just like Ashok Parekh is explaining, I think feel the same way. Huh? He was practically repeating everything you're saying. And saying, therefore, forget it. It's all bondage. It's all suffering. I'm just following you. No problem. I'm surrendered at your lotus feet. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, oh, you are surrendered to my lotus feet? Yes. Then go home, take care of your family, do your job. But whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. And always chant the holy name. And whatever you're doing, do it. Rechannel whatever you're doing for Krishna's glory. And King Prataparudra was a king. And when he found out, because he was a king, he could not have the association of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he made a vow that he was going to become a beggar and give up his whole kingdom. Did you know that? He was going to put on an ivory earring, which is the sign of, like, in those days, it was a total, a sect of total renunciates who give up everything. He said, if this is what it takes to please Lord Chaitanya, I'm going to do it. He so determined, he vowed to do it. But he was a good king. He was a Krishna conscious king. He was creating all facilities for the devotees. He was humbly worshipping Jagannath like a street sweeper. Therefore Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him very special mercy that in such a way that he never gave anyone mercy before. Very unique how he gave King Prataparudra his mercy. Just to keep him as king and to satisfy all of his aspirations for Krishna consciousness. Because Mahaprabhu wanted him to remain. All Mahaprabhu would have had to do is tell Sarvabhauma, oh, he wants to quit everything and become a sannyasi? Let him. No. He wanted him as king. So what's the difference between Rupa Goswami, who gave up the whole kingdom on the order of the Lord, and what is the difference of King Prataparudra, who maintained all of his responsibilities to family, home, and kingdom for the Lord? There's no difference. They are both simply doing whatever pleases Krishna most. Arjuna also, he was ready to take sannyas in the first chapter of the Gita. He was a perfect candidate for the sannyas ashram in the first chapter of Gita. Huh? But Lord Sri Krishna told him no. You tolerate all these difficulties, you fight with all these worldly people for my sake.
So therefore we must have spiritual guidance. Being a grihastha, brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyasi is not important. What is important is that we are simply trying to please Krishna in whatever we do. Whatever ashram we are in, we should not be cowards. We should not be afraid to face complexities, difficulties, and problems. We should be willing to tolerate them for Krishna's sake. Sometimes grihasthas think that this life has so many complications, sannyasis have it so easy. But it's not so easy. When you become a sannyasi, then everybody's problems become your problems. And plus so many accusations and everything. Look at Prabhupada and what they had to go through. But they did it because Krishna wanted it. Bhakti Siddhanta ordered Prabhupada to spread this message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in English language all over the world. That's what my guru wants. He was sitting in Vrindavan at the feet of Rupa Goswami. But he accepted so many complications, so many hardships, so many false accusations against him because it pleased Krishna. What Prabhupada went through and what he had to organize and manage is millions of times more than any of our businessmen. And he was a sannyasi. And he adopted a family of thousands. And they had all kinds of problems and he had to nourish all of them. On every level. So a devotee is not concerned with going from one ashram or one position to another to avoid the complications and the problems of life. In the spirit of Arjuna, a devotee is willing to fight and withstand anything and accept any kind of difficulty if it's the best way we can serve Krishna. And it's in pleasing Krishna that we make spiritual advancement. We have to give up our own conception of spiritual advancement and understand that the only spiritual advancement in the school of bhakti is by pleasing Krishna. Any other questions? Yes? He was being directed by Krishna. Yes, he was conscious. He was conscious that the Lord was going to take birth. And it was going to be the eighth. So whatever happens to the first seven, that's in his hands. But I have to prepare the way for him. And his great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, whose name was Yadu, he was the son of King Pururava. No, I'm sorry, the son of King Yayati. King Yayati had many children. And it's a long story, but by the curse of Shukracharya, he was made into an impotent invalid. And Shukracharya said, I'll give you back your youth and power only if you give your invalidity to one of your children and they're willing to accept it. Now, according to the Vedic principle, a son must obey his father. And if a son doesn't obey his father, he's a disgrace to his family's name and he's an offender. So King Yayati approached some of the sons and they said, forget it. We're not going to give up my youth and my happiness to be an invalid like you just because you want to have sex with somebody. Forget it. And they were condemned because they broke all the Vedic principle. Because for their own sense enjoyment, they disobey the command of the Father. And finally, one of the children, I think his name was Puru, he said, yes, he was the youngest of the children. He was the youngest. He said, yes, my father, the will of the Father is the will of God. I must accept. And he accepted in validity, and he's glorious. He's glorious to this day, because in the name of Dharma, to follow the principle of obedience to Father, he was willing to accept old age and invalidity and give his youth to his Father. But who is the most glorious of all his children? Yadu. Yadu broke the principle of following the Father. He said, no, my Father, I will not give you my youth. But he was different than his other brothers who refused. They are condemned, but he is the most glorified because he knew that it was Krishna's plan to take birth in his dynasty. And he knew that by surrendering to his father, which is a principle of dharma, he would be interfering with the supreme dharma of surrendering to Krishna. Therefore, he very much aggravated and disturbed his father and broke the moral principles of the Vedas to the highest principle of surrendering to Krishna. Sarva dharman purujya ja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishami masucha. He was following that highest principle of abandoning all other varieties of religion and surrendering to me. Some of his other brothers, they were abandoning all varieties of religion for the purpose of sense gratification. They were condemned. Puru was accepting all varieties of religion, but he was not willing to surrender to Krishna. Of course, he did not have that facility either. That was not his order. Puru did what was perfect for him to do, but Yadu did the most perfect, because he surrendered to Krishna. He broke the principle. He became infamous temporarily for disobeying his father, but he didn't care about his own fame or infamy. He was only concerned with the will of God being executed through him. So yes, these great souls, they were willing to endure or go through anything for Krishna's sake. They knew that Krishna was coming, and they knew their mission. Any other questions? We must also know our mission.